which is read on Shavuos, is identified with the concept of chesed. And of course, the Rambam in Mora Nebuchim gives a definition of what chesed is. That which a person is required to do, of course we call tzedakah, but that which is beyond the normal requirement of a person, but that he does out of the goodness of his heart, this is the concept of chesed, very briefly. And of course, Rus, in the wonderful characteristics that she manifests in the book of Rus, is the epitome of chesed, and therefore the model which we as Jews ought to follow. Of course, the gentlemen who are to present to us both the material on the shiurim and on the sermons are people who are doing a great chesed for all of us. And hopefully it will be a genuine chesed, as I know it will be. First, we have the privilege of having the person who is to become the president of the Rabbinical Council of America, the rabbi of the Adas Yeshur and Kahal Adas Yeshur of Kew Gardens, and a very prominent preacher and teacher, our good friend, Rabbi Dr. Bernard Rosenzweig.
So there, I won't keep you long. I think everyone wants to get to the sermons, really, and they're anxious to hear it. I was asked, I'm not sure, I'm really not sure why I was asked, particularly by Abe, to discuss, but...
Right after we finish, there will be a sandwich lunch.
To talk about Tikkun Leil Shavuot. The truth of the matter is that when I was growing up many years ago, I think Tikkun Leil Shavuos was one of the most neglected aspects of the Shavuos holiday. I grew up in a city where there were many Talmidei Chachamim, and yet with all of that, you couldn't find a shul that was open on Shavuos night. And when I first entered the rabbinate and I came to Toronto, I remember that for the first 4 or 5 years, I would be lucky if I mustered 4 or 5 people who were prepared to sit with me until 12, 12:30. 1 o'clock was already considered a deadline beyond which no one was prepared to be up at night. And it bothered me a great deal. And I felt that we were losing something that was of major importance, that Tikkun Leil Shavuos set the theme for all of Shavuos and for the proper ability to be mekabel the Torah. And subsequently, I developed for myself in Toronto, and then later on, again, when I came here to New York, and I confronted basically the same kind of problem, a somewhat different approach. And the result was that by the time I left Toronto, and today here in my own community in Kew Gardens, on for Tikkun Leil Shavuos, when we finally rise to daven early in the morning, we number anywhere from 60 to 100 people. Some of it is due to my work, and some of it is simply due to the fact that the character of my of Jewish life, of Torah life, has changed over the number of years. Now, what are the elements that go into this kind of Tikkun Leil Shavuos? Number one, first and foremost, it seems to me, is the complete involvement of the rabbi. Now, by that I mean two things. Number one, in terms of his presence. I know that there are communities where the rabbi will sit with those who are participating in Tikkun Leil Shavuos. So he'll sit with them till 12:30, till 1 o'clock, till 2 o'clock, And then he picks himself up and he says, I have to go home because I have to deliver a sermon in the morning to a much larger congregation. I don't do that. I have to be honest with you. I sit through the night with everybody, with everyone. And then when it's over, and Ronnie can attest to this, he was before he went into the rabbinate himself, he was in my community. When it is all over, I daven with the Hashkama Minyan. I daven together with them. And then I go home, I sit at home for an hour and a half, I pick myself up again, and I come back to shul and I deliver a sermon. It's not easy, and the older I get, it becomes a little more difficult. But I say to myself that this one time in the year, I can manage, I'll catch up with the sleep somewhere along the line. But in terms of setting a certain kind of tone, and psychologically, it becomes very, very important that everybody knows that the rabbi is there and that he is together with those people who have decided to make out of Tikkun Leil Shavuot with what it should be. So therefore, this is the first element, the rabbi's involvement in this area. The second thing that I think is important, and I have found this to be important, is that it is not really necessary, and it may be counterproductive for the rabbi to learn through the night. I think this is what I have done, at any rate. In the beginning, I used to do that. I used to feel that I had to give all of the classes that were to be given during the course of the evening. It's not really a successful way of doing it, except for the fact that the rabbi is going to knock himself out physically. The truth is that variety in this instance becomes very important. And the result is that what we have is, during the course of Tikkun Leil Shavuot, is that the night is made up of four sections. The night is made up really of four sections. It's the Arba Mishmoros in this case for the night. The night for us is made up into four sections. The first part of the night is actually going through the tikkun. We go through the tikkun. And what we do there is we involve the membership. In other words, each person takes another section. And so therefore you already have a lot of people involved in the tikkun. So therefore each person reads. We have a special ticket which everyone can get without any difficulty. Oh, here, I'm sorry. We have a special ticket which everyone can acquire, I imagine, in any of the bookstores. And each person is called upon to recite one section. And this may involve anywhere up to 30 people. It can involve anywhere up to 30 people just in that area alone. After we have concluded with the tikkun, then we will serve refreshments. Refreshments are served during the course of the night. There's an abundance of tea available, and of course cake and fruit. And we spend about 15 minutes in refreshment. It's a break for everyone who is concerned. And at that point. The people who are present have one of two choices. Either they can continue with us, or, as happens in the case of many of the younger men, particularly those who are products of the yeshiva, they can retire to the Beis Medrash, where they can learn the chavrusa during the course of the night. So we have a group of people who will spend the night learning in the Beis Medrash. As they would have if they were sitting in the yeshiva in the Beis Medrash, and they will learn whatever they want to learn, whatever Gemara strikes their fancy, whatever Gemara they happen to be learning regularly during the course of the year, whatever Gemara they feel they should set aside for Shavuot, that's what they learn. We, in organized fashion, then begin the next stage, and that is I give a shiur. At that stage, I give a shiur, and I give a shiur normally in the Gemara Shabbos, in that area which discusses Shavuos. Those three blocks that you have there, and every year I do a different part of it. I move through it slowly because there's a great deal to be said, There isn't too much to be said in terms of Rishonim and the Achronim, but in terms of the Agadita, there is a great deal to share in terms of the Gemara. So I give a shiur which lasts anywhere from an hour to an hour and a half, depending on the amount of time that I have. And then when I've concluded, there's again a break for about 10 to 15 minutes. At that point, after we have done that, I usually have two other elements that enter. And that, one will usually be something on the Book of Ruth. For this, I invite one of the other rabbis in the community. I'm blessed, I was lucky in Toronto as well, that we have a number of musmokin, either of our yeshiva or outside of our yeshiva, who live in our community, and I take full advantage of them. I maintain good relationships with them, and I utilize them. I think it adds to the quality of a community. And some of them are members of my own congregation. And so therefore, I will speak to them beforehand, as I have, for example, to two of our people. And one, for example, who teaches in Frisch High School, will give, as he gave last year, will give a shiur in something which I'll discuss in a moment. But the other one, I have a young man who is one of our people, who this year will teach, I think, the first parak of Rus. And he will prepare it adequately, and he will share it with the community. In other years, for example, I've had people who have taken specific aspects of Ruth. For example, one of the things that once went over very, very well was someone used Eliyahu Kitov's Sefer HaTeidah. And he has there, in the Sefer HaTeidah, he has a beautiful section on Ruth and Boaz. A beautiful section. If you've ever read it, you'll see it's really one of his best pieces of work. And using that as a base, he spent an hour and a half in just discussing Ruth and Boaz. I've had someone, for example, who came along who gave a shiur based on Lavelle's Torah, on Mayavi Veloy Mayavis. It's a very famous piece of Torah, and he gave a shiur based on that in terms of Ruth. And then this too takes about an hour and a half. And people sit, I have to tell you, we have, through the night, sitting in this, there'll be anywhere from 25 to 35 people, depending on the hour of the night. And then the third section that we have usually involves Tehillim. Someone will choose a section in Tehillim, as I have, for example, this time, or, if not in Tehillim, in the Midrashic literature on Shavuos. And there is a whole range of Midrashic literature for Shavuos that is used, and this is presented. Now, and this works out. By the time we are through with the third one, we're ready to daven. The night has passed. There has been a variety in terms of both subject matter and in terms of those who present the subject matter. It's not the same voice that you hear. Everyone who participates, I must tell you, and this is also a key, prepares adequately. I speak to whoever I want to do these things at least 4 or 5 weeks beforehand, and I will make the arrangements at that time for whatever the subject shall be and the amount of time that they are to speak. And the result is that you can feel that the preparation is there, that the first people are involved are serious, and the result is that we have a very serious response to this particular evening. And as a consequence, when we come to Dublin, for example, last year, our Beis Medrash was full. There were probably between 90 to 100 people who davened with us, made up, as I say, of some people who spent the night simply in the Beis Medrash, and many others who spent the evening in this structured program, and who feel every year that they gain a great deal, and eagerly look forward to a program of this nature for the coming year. And it's grown, as I say, over the years, and I'm looking forward to see what our numbers will be this year. I can't be sure until I see them, but I have a feeling that we'll do even better in terms of our attendance than we have done in any other previous year. That's it. I'm through with my presentation, and I don't think there are any questions.
We know that the program that Rabbi Rosenzweig outlined is one that is, in one way or another, adapted in many of the metropolitan area congregations and even in the out-of-town congregations. And it is an increasingly effective way in which the rabbi can reach a congregation on a teaching level. And not only on a teaching level, but on the level of togetherness in a spiritual atmosphere. I now recall, must be 25 years that I last heard Rabbi Schachter speak on Shavuos, and I still remember the sermon. It used them a great effect over the years. And of course, I don't have to, we all know that Rabbi Schachter is one of the master preachers in this country, and those of us who have had the privilege of hearing him preach in Israel in a perfect Hebrew and on the radio in Israel know that he's good in at least three languages, in Hebrew, Yiddish, and English. So we all are in for a very great treat, and it's a real pleasure to present Rabbi Herschel Schachter.
Thank you. Since Rabbi Schreier attested to the fact that I know Yiddish, I want to tell you that he introduced this whole section of our session this morning with the fact that Rabbi Rosenzweig and I were going to perform an act of chesed. I want to tell you that the invitation to enable a rabbi to speak is in itself an act of chesed on the part of the audience. And there is a klal in Yiddish, sagt man, as a gemilas chesed tomen lang nicht halten. Actually, I just put together a few notes. I don't think that it is at all essential for us to go into the formal presentation of the sermon, its structure, its development, its applications. What I would rather do this morning is just really briefly run through several ideas. And I know that I have the privilege of speaking in the presence of seasoned and accomplished preachers who need only a little remez, a rayin, a chomer midrush, and the rest, I'm sure, each one of us, kiyad Hashem ha-tuva olav, will be able to develop it. All of us seek names. Everybody wants to make a name for himself, for herself. Tragedy of life is when we encounter people who are nameless, people who go through life with a cloak of anonymity. On Shavuos in the book of Ruth, we encounter one who is indeed for all time anonymous. Pliny Almoini. The remarkable fact about this person is that he indeed did have a name. And the rabbis tell us that his name was significantly Tov. Why was he not referred to by his name in the text of Ruth? Rashi says two reasons. Sheloi ova lig oil, because he refused to fulfill his obligation to in fact take Ruth unto himself. And the second, Shehoyo Ilaim Bidivrei Torah. Almoini Shehoyo Ilaim Bidivrei Torah. The man not only had a name, Tov, but obviously Kishmo Kenhu, he must have been a good person. He must have had the potential to do good. but he never fulfilled that potential. He had an opportunity to help. He rejected that opportunity, and therefore he remained nameless. There are many people, and we encounter them in every walk of life, who are endowed with certain good qualities, who can do so much good, and if they were to do the good of which they are capable, they would indeed achieve a name for themselves. Alas, they sink into oblivion, they take on a cloak of anonymity, they are forgotten, their names are unknown, because they did not do the good of which they were capable. You can perhaps use this framework in relation to Yizkor, when we remember our loved ones, when we mention the names of our loved ones, when we look upon the plaques in our synagogue on which are inscribed the names of loved ones gone by. Everyone seeks this name. To achieve that name, to be remembered by name, one must, in fact, fulfill the good of which one is capable. In Rus again, there are two brief psukim describing the relationship between Rus and her sons. One pasuk says, Vatisho'er hi ushnei boneho. Later, Vatisho'er isho mishnei yilodeho. Interesting. In the one instance, before the tragedy, her sons are referred to as boneho, bonim. Pardon? Yeah. Well, I said in the book of Ruth, I'm not talking about the children of Ruth. The sons of Naomi are referred to as boneho. After the tragedy, after they took unto themselves Noshim Nochriyos, they are referred to as Yilodeha. What is the difference? Certainly they were much older then. Machlon and Chilion were first called Bonim and then Yilodim. What is a Bain? Why is a son called Bain? Lomo Nikro Bain Sheboine Oilomoy. This is in itself a nice rhyme that can be used in a variety of circumstances. A son is the one who builds on the background of his family, of his father. He is responsible for providing the continuity, the hemshech. He builds new worlds. If he in fact is mamshech, if he perpetuates the heritage of his parents, of his family, of Klal Yisrael, so that before this tragedy, Machlon and Chilion were in fact bonim. They were those who were bonei olamos. When they rejected the continuity, when they in fact married out of the faith and met the disasters that ultimately were their lot, they were only referred to as Yilodim. All that remained was the normal physical, natural attachment. They were children, they were born of this woman, but they were not Bonim in the sense of Bonei Olam. Interesting that our distinguished colleague Rabbi Rosenzweig spoke about the need for Tikkun Leil Shavuos, learning Torah the night of Shavuos. I was fascinated by the fact that every Yom Tov has an Erev Yom Tov that is different from the Yom Tov itself. Lemoshe. All of Chodesh Elul we blow Shofar. Comes Erev Rosh Hashanah, we don't blow shofar, so that the Tkiyah Shofar Shal Mitzvah will be meaningful. We can eat matzah all year long. Erev Pesach, we do not eat matzah, so that the Kiyum HaMitzvah should be B'Teyavon. We fast on Yom Kippur, so that Erev Yom Kippur we should eat. One would imagine that Erev Shavuos, one should not learn Torah, so that the Kabbalah HaTorah will be with greater Teyavon if we follow that pattern of other significant dates in the calendar. And yet the fact is, not only do we abstain from learning, but we should, and would that all of our congregations would be able to tell the kind of success story that Rabbi Rosenzweig told about his congregations. Not only are we not mafsik, but we should be up all night learning more than any other night. Why? To teach us a simple lesson. That the only way you can be mekabel Torah, the only way you can learn Torah, is by learning Torah. The only way you can learn to swim is by swimming. In the instance of Torah learning, there you cannot say that you will develop a greater te'avon for Torah by not learning Torah. This cannot be. Nasa v'nishma, certainly a very legitimate theme for Shavuos. There are countless drashos on Nasa v'nishma, Amo pezizo dekadmisu pumaychu luodnaychu. I have a little interesting chidush. The greatness of Nasa v'nishma, of which our ancestors were so proud, the Tzorim, all the Chazon that described Nasa v'nishma. We all pride ourselves on the fact that our ancestors declared Nasa before Nishma. I submit that the uniqueness of this great achievement symbolized by Nasa v'nishma is expressed by the fact that Nishma came after Naaseh. Not only that Naaseh came before Nishma, with all the interpretations that are familiar to us, but that Nishma followed after Naaseh. We live in a utilitarian world. We want to do only that which has pragmatic value. What's in it for me? Why should I do it? What is its practical application? We reduce every value and every concept only to what I can get from it, to what practical purpose does it serve. The greatness of our ancestors and of this whole concept of Nasa v'nishma is expressed in the fact that after the Nasa, after the commitment to do, after, in fact, if we may homiletically interpret, after the fact has already been done, after the accomplishment has been achieved, then we must first proceed to Nishma. Then we must first learn and study and deepen our understanding without any relation to the practical application. The Nasa is already done. After Nasa, then Nishma, then learn, then study. There are so many applications to this, without question. Even in simple terms, I once said the talk about the family that prays together stays together. We pray not in order to stay together. We observe mitzvahs not because it is a guarantee for the perpetuation or survival of the Jewish people. The purpose of prayer or the purpose of Shmiras HaMitzvahs is not only so that we can then achieve whatever practical or pragmatic or meaningful purpose it can serve in our lives. After the Naaseh, then the Nishma. Religious education is pursued not only because it will help to eliminate problems of juvenile delinquency, We have taken all of the sublime ideals of life and we have reduced them to very practical purposes. There is almost a cult of practicality in our lives. This is why the Nishma follows the Naaseh, to teach us that there is much that we could learn, that we could study, that we could proceed after and beyond the realm of the Maaseh or of the pragmatic, practical achievement. I'm very happy that our beloved colleague Rabbi Hollander is here. I have a vatel that I once heard from him, and I want to say it b'shem Imrei, certainly in his presence. Maybe if he wouldn't be here, I wouldn't be such a tzaddik. Rabbi Hollander said on the familiar Chorus, Cherus, Al Tikva Chorus, El Cherus, Chazal say, there are three manifestations of this concept of Cherus, of absolute freedom, that is the result of Kabbalah Satira. Hamalchuyos, Cherus min Hayisurim, Cherus min Malach Hamaves. Power, sovereignty, we know all too frequently corrupts. Not to go into a whole sweep of history, certainly modern history, from the French Revolution. We know how the French Revolution was accompanied by a reign of terror. We just pick up the newspapers these last days and we see what's happening in Zaire, what's happening in all of these newly born independent African states, and you see what they have done with Malchus, with their newborn sovereignty. They have committed the most vile murder. They've been so terribly insensitive to human suffering, the very suffering from which they suffered, of which they were the victims. Now, as soon as they grasp Malchus, they murder and plunder and butcher innocent people. The callousness to suffering that comes dafke with power. Very often Malchus destroys principles of morality, of ethics, of peace, of idealism, so on and so on. To talk about the Soviet Union, about all governments that have come to that level of Malchus. I think it is fair for us to point out with pride, as we speak now about the 30th anniversary of the establishment of the State of Israel, of Malchus Yisrael, that thank God we can point to the fact that we are Chevus min HaMalchus, that this kind of sovereignty that wrought havoc with other nations who achieved their sovereign independence certainly did not bring that kind of corruption to Memshelet Yisrael. There can be arguments about whether the government of Israel recently overreacted when they invaded Lebanon. There are chilukei deis. But certainly no one would ever dare suggest that the kind of corruption, of immorality, the kind of bestial cruelty that characterizes the activity of so many of these other so-called newly formed states in Africa, that kind of Malchus certainly Israel is free from. So that the moral imperatives of Torah in the broadest sense, the whole heritage of our faith and our people, enabled Israel, upon achieving its sovereignty, to be chevus min hamalchios in that negative sense. Chevus min hayisurim. Certainly our people have been exposed to yisurim, and here the opportunity to speak of the Holocaust, the whole scope of what has happened in our generation. On the one hand, the tragedies of the Yisurim of the Holocaust that would have utterly destroyed a people of lesser stature, a people bereft of Kabbalah HaTorah would never be free from the impact of the Yisurim to the degree that they were suffered by our people. The two great moments of our generation. Finally, Chavus Min Malach HaMavet. Only Torah can endow our people with immortality. Sure, individual people die. No human being lives forever. But in terms of Klal Yisrael, Torah provides that chavus to ensure Netzach Yisrael. There are two interesting psukim that are strikingly similar, one preceding Matan Torah and one immediately after Matan Torah. Shortly before the actual pronouncement of the Aseres HaDibros, we read, Vayihi bayom hashlishi bihiyos habeker, vayihi kolei suvrokim vonon kovid al ha'or v'kol shefer chozok, and so on. Immediately after the Aseres HaDibros, there is a pasuk that, as I say, is strikingly similar. V'chol ha'om royim es ha'kilois ves ha'lapidim ves k'il ha'shefa ves ha'or oshim. What is the difference? There's one little chap here. You can challenge anybody in your shul if you have Jews who follow and look in the Chumash while you're talking. Before Matan Torah, the phrase is k'ilois uvrokim. Immediately after Matan Torah, the phrase is es ha'kilois ves ha'lapidim. And I looked in the English translation, whether it's Hertz or any other Chumash, in both cases, the translation reads, the thunder and the lightning. But there's a difference between Barak and Lapid. The Barak is the momentary flash of lightning. A quick, momentary flash that quickly disappears. Lapid, we know, is the torch, the beacon, the flame. Before Kabbalah HaTorah, the commitment may have been a fleeting, momentary one. It was after Kabbalah HaTorah that that momentary blitz, that spark became a lapid, a torch, an abiding flame, a permanent beacon. Yeah, you can talk about whatever you wish in terms of tenacity, perseverance, of holding on. The Torah can have meaning only if, in fact, it is translated into the realities of daily living, not just a fleeting, momentary high. I had another sermon. Where did I leave it? Strange. Did you ever get up in the pulpit and start looking for your notes and not find them? I had another sermon. Let's see if I can remember it, Balpev. The very familiar philosophical question. This is the last one and I'm finished. The familiar philosophical question that is posed by the medieval philosophers, among them Kuzri, who ask why in the opening statement of the Aseres HaDibros does the Rabbeinu Shel Olam introduce himself, as it were, Anochi Hashem Elokecha Asher Hotzeicha Me'eretz Mitzrayim. Why not Asher Barochi Shamayim Va'oretz? It certainly would be a much more imposing visit card. Hashem wanted to establish his credentials and make his words more meaningful and arouse the people to a more enthusiastic response to that with which he was challenging them. Would it not have been infinitely more impressive had he said, Asher Barochi Shamayim Va'oretz, the creator of the universe, the principle of harmony, the vast expanses of outer space, all the Yivrei I leave to you. And there are many answers, logical, philosophical. I would like to submit this simple thought. Creation, and surely Briya Yesh Me'ayin, is an act of divine proportions. Yet, even for God, creation per se is not the most impressive feat. Greater than creation is recreation. To take a people that had been subjected to abject slavery, to throw off the shackles of human bondage, to lift a degenerate people from the depths of slavery and servitude to the heights of freedom, to Maimed Har Sinai. This is an infinitely greater achievement that even the Rabbeinu Shlomo himself was more proud of. Therefore, when he spoke out to his people gathered at the foot of Sinai, he felt it important to declare his greatness as made manifest in the fact, Asher Borossi, Asher Hoitzeisicho Me'eretz Mitzrayim, not Asher Borossi. The illustrations are clear. I don't mean Chas V'Shalom to be lightheaded or facetious, but to create a child is not such a difficult process. Even to rear a child normally, naturally, no great shakes, no great ness. But to take an adult and bring that adult back, or in many cases, they never were there to start with, bring an adult to the point where he or she is ready to change an entire lifestyle, to submit to Kabbalah Sel Teiro Mitzvahs. This kind of recreation is an enormously significant achievement. And this is the task with which so many are and should be involved in Kiruv Rechikim and this whole movement, Baruch Hashem, the movement of which so many of us are proud and which so many of us do play an important role, of the whole Baalei Tshuva movement in our generation, which has no precedent. This is the greatness, to bring people who were so far away to a life of Torah and mitzvahs. Speak in broader terms about the miracle of the Renaissance of Soviet Jewry. Again, all the Ivre I leave to you. The birth of the State of Israel, its struggle for survival. This remarkable miracle of our generation. What a remarkable generation this is. If ever there was a generation that was cursed with all the pain and the suffering and the martyrdom, it is our generation. And at the same time, this is the paradox of contemporary Jewish life. If ever there was a generation that was blessed with unparalleled, unprecedented privilege and opportunity, it is again our generation. We saw, and I may, just in a very personal sense, you may know that during the last days of the Second World War, when I served as a chaplain with frontline combat troops across Europe and came into concentration camps and saw the whole grim, sordid, indescribable tragedy of Jewish life, to witness how from mamish, from gas chamber and crematoria, the State of Israel was born. Asher Hoitzeisicho Me'eretz Mitzrayim is the greatestness, the recreation of a people. This is the step to Kabbalah Satura. This is why the Rabbeinu Shlomo introduced himself, not in terms of the Creator, but of the great, ineffable source of our strength that recreates man and the Jewish people.
I want to thank Rabbi Schachter for a very inspiring and very, you